Hello and welcome to the History of Colonization podcast. My name is Fidelity and this is episode 16 of the podcast. So I've briefly talked about Malinche, the indigenous translator who worked with the Spanish conquistadors in part 1 of the Aztec-Spanish War. But the reason I haven't really gone in-depth into her story is because I wanted to dedicate an episode to her, instead of constantly mentioning her as a sidekick to Cortés. So in this episode, I'll give an introduction of Malinche, and afterwards we'll have an interview with a Mexican author, Laura Esquivel, who has reinterpreted Malinche in her novel. So let's start off with the question, who is Malinche? She has often been portrayed as a traitor to her own people for translating for the conquistadors, and her role was undeniably pivotal in the interactions between the Spanish and the Aztecs. She was also Hernán Cortés's concubine, and she gave birth to their son, who would later be considered one of the first mestizos in New Spain. But it's important to note that with Malinche, we have to be aware of the difference between Malinche, the actual historical figure, versus the other Malinche who has been represented and reinterpreted throughout Mexican history and culture. And of course, these two Malinches are not necessarily at odds with each other, and there may be overlaps between the historical figure and the myth. And here I quote from Indrani Mukherjee, quote, "Malinche is a myth, but located in history, fiction, and folklore. She is an archetype, which is feminist, nomadic, and on the border. She is a bad wife, a bad mother, and a public woman." Unquote. Let's start with what we know about Malinche in history. She left no written records, and we only know about her from Spanish and indigenous sources. Cortés barely mentions her in his sources, and it is mostly in Bernal Díaz's The True History of the Conquest of New Spain that she is portrayed as a major figure in the Aztec-Spanish War. She is also featured quite prominently in Tlaxcalan codices, where there are many images of Malinche as a well-dressed woman beside Cortés, and she is similar in size or even larger than Cortés in these sources. We don't know what her birth name actually was, but we know that the Spanish christened her Marina. The Nahua people called her Malintzin, which was an honorific form of the name Malina, and the Spanish heard it as Malinche, and so she became La Malinche. She was born in an Altepetl beyond the Aztec Empire, Altepetl meaning a city-state, and she grew up speaking Nahuatl, but by the age of 12, she was sold into slavery to a group of Chontal Maya. She became fluent in Chontal Maya and Yucatec Maya, and eventually she was offered as a tribute along with other women after the Chontal Maya were defeated by the conquistadors. She became very valuable to the Spanish when they realized that she was able to translate from Yucatec Maya to Nahuatl, the language of the Aztecs. And so Cortés would speak, and the Spanish translator Jeromino de Aguilar would translate from Spanish to Yucatec Maya, and Malinche then translated from Yucatec Maya to Nahuatl. But eventually she learned enough Spanish, so that Aguilar was no longer needed. And so she was by Cortés' side throughout the war, as the crucial intermediary for the negotiations and conflict between the Mexica and the Spanish. We know that Malinche was smart enough to pick up multiple languages quickly. There is also evidence that she was key in persuading the indigenous people to abandon their fight against the Spanish by citing her experience in witnessing Spanish military might up close. It's often been said that Malinche was in love with Cortés, which led to the betrayal of her own people, but in fact this was quite unlikely. Malinche was a concubine to Cortés, and she was close to Cortés as his translator, but she was also very pragmatic and politically aware, and she would have known that she was just one of his many concubines, and her loyalty to Cortés would have stemmed from the need to survive and her choice to thrive as an indigenous woman in the face of both Spanish and Aztec violence. A few months after the fall of Tenochtitlan, she gave birth to Cortés' son, Martin Cortés. By 1524, she married one of the conquistadors, Juan Jaramillo. She would die at almost 30 years old, just a few years later. The image of Malinche has changed since the fall of Tenochtitlan, and like many re-examinations of colonial history, this happened when Mexico gained independence from Spain in the early 19th century. Malinche came to be seen as a shameful figure, a traitor to her own people, and a representation of Spanish colonization and most importantly, a symbol of foreign domination. Modern scholars and writers took on a different view from the second half of the 20th century. First, they saw her as a victim and a survivor of the circumstances that she found herself in, a slave who did the best she could by allying herself with the conquistadors. Nowadays, however, she is more commonly portrayed as a bridge between different cultures, And to quote from Camilla Townsend's Malinson's Choices, quote, a transfigured symbol of fragmented identity and multiculturalism, unquote. To find out more about Malinche in popular representation, I interviewed Laura Esquivel, a Mexican author who wrote Para Agua Como Chocolate, Like Water for Chocolate. She published her novel Malinche in 2006, and it tells the story of the Spanish conquest through Malinche's eyes. In the interview, Laura introduces her book, her insight into Malinche's perspective, and her reinterpretation of the figure of Malinche as a Mexican herself. This interview was recorded over Zoom, and the full interview is available on YouTube, which has a section not included in this episode. The link to the video is available in the description. This interview was translated in real time by Jordi Castells, who is also the illustrator for the codex images in Malinche. Here is the interview.
So the first question, I was wondering why you chose to write about the figure of Malinche, because I read in another interview in the book you published that the publishing house in Spain talked to you about the figure of Malinche. But I was wondering if you had any like other motivations for writing about Malinche. Like, did you hear about Malinche before the publishing house told you about it?
Of course, Malinche is an essential figure in our national history. The thing is, traditionally, what we're taught at school as children is that she was a traitor, or in the best of cases, a collaborator with the Spaniards to overthrow the Aztec Empire. Malinche is the only novel that I've written by request of a publisher. So when these publishers sought me out and told me they wanted a short novelized biography of Malinche, I immediately agreed, and then I wondered, how come I had never thought of writing about this character myself?
Cuando empiezo a desarrollar esta...
So when I started doing all the historical research, I was very careful and very strict that I stuck to the information that we had from that time period only. And I started to discover immediately that Malinche wasn't this person that I had been told about.
Para empezar, tú para ser...
For starters, you know, for you to become a traitor to somebody, that means you would have to have belonged, you know, to that group or to that institution. And that was not the case with her. She belonged to a culture that was under the Aztecs' rule, basically, or, you know, a tributary state of the Aztecs. So I became fascinated with the story of this woman who had to have been very, very brilliant and smart because she didn't speak Spanish, obviously. It's been said that in 3 months she was fluent in Spanish. So the connection was one of Cortés's soldiers spoke Mayan, and when they discovered that she spoke Nahuatl, they used her to translate from Maya to Nahuatl when communicating with Cortés's envoys.
Y nada más de hacer ese ejercicio de triangulación, ella aprendió,
and from that triangulation, she taught herself Spanish. Just after memorizing what Cortés said to the Mayan speaker in Spanish, she learned, you know, memorized and learned Spanish, which gives you an idea of how bright her mind was. And her job as a translator had to have been very complicated because Nahuatl, Maya as well, are very symbolic languages, filled with poetry also, and metaphors. For example, the translation of the word Quetzalcoatl, you can't say its only meaning is a flying snake, because behind that symbolic image of a flying snake was this entire breadth of a worldview and the view of the cosmos that they had. And this worldview language, you know, that talks about this flying snake expresses how one can put aside earthly condition in order to become a spirit and be able to fly. So I was amazed by that whole side. And then when I started actually writing, I had two big challenges. So one of the big challenges was that I had to create this historical character, because in the information that I had from the time that the Spaniards wrote their chronicles of the conquest, there was very little information about her. There was at the most, there were 6 pages that mentioned her. So I could really develop her as a character. But then I also, you know, had to respect the historical events that had happened. So I felt like that was like a corset or something that was squeezing me and, you know, forcing me to fit into that storyline. So it took me 3 years of research. Throughout reading, you know, many books, many historical theses and papers, but I also had access to oral traditions, because to this day in Mexico, we have guardians of sacred traditions. So with all of this, I finally had enough, you know, material to sit down and start writing about her. So, you know, it's people say that we never see the world as it is. We see the world as we think it is. And my question from the beginning is, what was she like? What did she think? What meaning was behind lighting a fire for her? What was the meaning behind watching the sky? What was the meaning behind a kernel of corn for her? It had to have been the profound spiritual beliefs that she had inherited that led her to see the world in a certain way. And I imagine that when she saw the Spaniards, she wanted to believe, like many others, that they were, you know, proof that Quetzalcoatl had come back. And for me, the key to make this all fit together in my writing was that image, Quetzalcoatl, and what it meant. Because that's the motive behind the mistake, but it's also a symbol of liberation. So what I did in order to organize the material, I had help from me. He is a graphic designer and illustrator. So I had all this information that I had to organize and then I had to synthesize because, you know, I was asked to write a short book. So for example, nowadays, we all have our smartphones and we keep our pictures there of things that we like, etc. So we have our own stories that we tell through pictures. So I thought if she had been able to tell her own story, she would have done it through images. Because in our ancestors' cultures, how they kept and transferred knowledge was through codexes, which is a pictographic language. So they wrote in these codexes and that's how they preserved memory.
So I have another question for you. From your historical research, how did you decide how much to include in your novel versus how much creative license you would take?
I really, really, really stuck as much as I could to the historical events. So that was a big challenge to develop the story of Malinche, story that had not been told, but based on historical events and whatever recollection we had of that time. For example, for me, it was very important to explain why the presence of a female deity, goddess, was very important. Because in the pre-Hispanic tradition, every deity had both a male version and a female version. And this interaction between the masculine and the feminine is what gives life to the entire universe.
Y por ejemplo, cuando ella, Cortés,
so Cortés, when he comes, he brings with him an image of the Virgin of Guadalupe. So that was very important to me because then she starts wondering in the religion that they get imposed upon, where is that female version of Jesus? So in the novel, I develop, you know, this whole storyline of the female sacred, starting with this goddess that was Cihuacóatl, the Great Mother. So I, in the story, I create this thread that starts with Cihuacóatl, this pre-Hispanic goddess, and starts transforming into the version we know of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico, and Malinche participates in that.
Ella, el nombre de ella no era Malinche.
Her name was not Malinche. Her name was Malinalli. And the glyph for the date of her birthday is a skull that has that weed named Malinalli. Its meaning is that everything dies in order to be reborn, and that's her name. She represents everything that needs to die in order to be reborn, starting with language. She is Cortez's tongue. So she is this tongue. She's this tongue that begins to speak, that begins to translate, starts becoming the union of these two cultures and these two ways of thought that are completely different.
Entonces, La idea.
So in this book, I talk about how she has to confront her own beliefs. For example, I think she was sure that the Spaniards were the envoys of Quetzalcoatl, but she has to have realized very quickly that that wasn't true. But she couldn't go back because changing her mind meant she was killing herself.
I wonder if you would describe the relationship between Cortés and Malinalli as a sort of metaphor for the relationship between the colonizer and the colonized. You know, like how Malinalli was at first, you know, entranced by Cortez, but after the massacre of Cholula and the Alvarado massacre, she realizes that, you know, they're really savage and violent. So why did you depict the relationship between Cortez and Malinalli this way? Was it a metaphor that you intended for colonization?
No era una metáfora. En verdad, ellos tuvieron una relación intensa.
No, I don't think I meant it as a metaphor. They really had a very intense relationship. And I think that she was as important to him that he tried to find a way within his structure of beliefs and his culture to leave her in a good position. He was never going to marry her. He was very ambitious. And what he wanted from the conquest was to be the ruler of Mexico, even independent from the Spanish crown. So, you know, in order to get to that point, he had to have a Spanish wife to be in the good graces of Spanish society. So his way of giving her a good life and leaving her in good standing was to marry her off to one of his captains. It wasn't the best of marriages. And once more, Malinche found herself in a subordinate position until with Jaramillo, she finally finds a partner that values her and with whom she can establish a relationship. And right before the end, what I intend is to explain how she herself becomes Quetzalcoatl.
Ella con Quetzalcoatl, que era una deidad.
Quetzalcoatl in mythology was fooled by his own brother through the use of a black obsidian mirror. So Hernán Cortés was to Malinche that black mirror. And she tells him so. She, towards the end, she says, the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my life was to see myself reflected in your black mirror. So, you know, like Quetzalcoatl, the way that the snake can leave the earth and, you know, fly up into the heavens and become, in tradition, a star. She does this entire summation, recapitulation of her life. She confronts her black mirrors that were showing her an image that was not her. And that is when she transmutates there in her home, in the patio. She becomes light. And that is how I wrap up her story.
Pero para mí fue todo una...
But for me, writing her story was also a way for me to dignify the history, my history. So on a very subconscious level for Mexicans, she represents the mother and Cortez the father. So Cortez is thought of as a murderer and a thief, and she is a prostitute and a traitor. And if we think that we are the children of that union, a thief, a murderer, and a prostitute and a traitor, then what does that make us? Probably doesn't make us people that are worthy of respect, worthy of living in peace, worthy of being seen and recognized. So one of our great writers, Octavio Paz, he speaks about that in his book, The Labyrinth of Solitude. He speaks of this phenomenon of feeling that we are hijos de la chingada, which translates basically to son of the raped whore. So we're in that process of redignification. So if we were able to have a new way of looking at both Malinche and Cortés and value that historical moment as something that was a union, because the Spaniards themselves had blood, you know, African blood, Arab blood, even Asian blood. So people that came and conquered the natives had blood from all over the world already. And Mexico is a place, it's like a womb where all of this is truly mixed, and it's truly the birth of a new race. And I feel very proud of being that.
Just to add on, and this is the last question, I wonder what your reception for your book was like in Mexico and internationally. Did people tell you, like, you changed their impression of the story of Malinche and the conquest?
Y aquí, en verdad, se mezcla.
Yeah, people really liked this new way of seeing Malinche. And now there are many historians, you know, and intellectuals who are reevaluating Malinche and her presence. Not just because of my book, no, but it's something that has been happening. And internationally, it had an impact. You know, there were people that were very interested in this character. Some countries more than others. I can tell you that Germany, Spain, Italy, for example. And it's really amazing to me because I think that's very important. When you look back at your past, we shouldn't only be judging and analyzing from the present. We have to try to place yourself in that moment of history. And that's the way that you can really, truly understand why people acted the way they acted, by putting yourself in their place.
Thanks for listening to this episode. You can find a full transcript, both in Spanish and in English, on my blog hocpodcast.wordpress.com. You can also find various other links and notes on the episode in the blog. See you soon!